First, I want to introduce myself. I'm Michael Müller, and for those who did not read the information sheet about teaching staff, I am from East Germany. I'm an ordained minister there in a Lutheran church. I graduated from the Lutheran seminary in Leipzig, and I received my PhD from the Karl Marx University of Leipzig. And since August last year, I'm an exchange professor at Trinity Lutheran Seminary and at Gettysburg Lutheran Seminary, and I'm going back to East Germany this August. First, I want to tell you what I'm not going to talk about, because in this session we have a kind of compromise. Last week I did a five-part session on church and Christianity in the communist countries, and this week I have to do it in only one session, so of course I have to drop something. I will not speak much about history. I will not speak about other communist countries. Today I only deal with the German Democratic Republic, or East Germany. And I make it more or less as a slideshow. I will show some slides about the life in East Germany, the church in East Germany, politics, and the struggle of the church in a communist country. At first, some facts about the church. Some people in the United States have been very surprised when they heard that I'm an ordained pastor in East Germany, in a communist country, because they didn't expect that there is any church in a communist country. But quite the opposite is true. There is a church, and in East Germany, there is a pretty strong church. Still, almost 50% of the population regards themselves as Christians, and most of them, over 80%, belong to the Lutheran Church, because East Germany was the mainland of the Reformation. Those of you who may have taken a Reformation tour through Europe know that most of the Luther sites are in East Germany: Wittenberg, the Wartburg, Eisenach, Erfurt, all the places are in East Germany. The official figures about Christianity in East Germany are that there are 10 million Christians. We have a population of almost 17 million. I think that is a bit too high. I think there are around 7 to 8 million Christians. Anyway, 80% of these Christians are Lutheran, 13% are Roman Catholic, and only 7% belong to other churches, as the Methodist Church or the Baptist Church, or we have even a small Mormon congregation. You have, according to the Constitution of East Germany, you have the right to be a Christian, and you have the freedom of religion. Article 39 of the Constitution says, every citizen of the German Democratic Republic has the right to confess and to practice religious convictions. The churches and other religious fellowships handle their own affairs and practice their beliefs in accordance with the Constitution and legal stipulations of the German Democratic Republic. Further concerns can be regulated by means of additional agreements. Two things are important in this article, or three things. One thing is that every citizen of East Germany should know that he or she has the right to be a Christian. There are people who do not know that in East Germany. The second, which is important to listen to, is the statement according to the Constitution and legal stipulations of East Germany. That means you cannot speak of total religious freedom in East Germany. The religious freedom is limited by the laws of East Germany, for example, by the law how you can assemble, or by the law what you can publish, or by the law that you have to announce events in your congregation. So there is a right for being a Christian, but these rights are limited. The third very important point, which is important to understand the situation in East Germany, which is different from the Soviet Union, Poland, Czechoslovakia, or other communist countries. In East Germany, the church has the right to handle its own affairs. That means, according to the words of the Secretary for Church Affairs, a member of the Communist Party, that the church can do whatever it wants inside the church. The state does not interfere in the business of the church, but on the other hand, the state expects that the church does not interfere in the politics of the state. And we will see very soon that this is a foundation of a conflict. And exactly this conflict is a conflict in which the Church of East Germany struggles in their daily life. Maybe I should start with the slides. Could someone switch off the light? Because it's easier to understand if you see some pictures too. I always tell people that a good idea to go to East Germany is to choose a very unusual way, to choose a ferry boat from Sweden. Because then this is the first picture you get. And this is maybe a nice picture. These are the chopper, the chalk cliffs on the Isle of Rügen. And maybe it's a nice way to enter East Germany, but it is a very difficult way because it's a long detour. Most people come via Berlin. And I don't know how familiar you are with the situation in Europe and with the situation of the divided Germany. Berlin is a city which is in the middle of the territory of East Germany. Only 80 miles to the east is already the Polish border, and around 150 miles towards the west is the West German border. Berlin is a city which is surrounded by a wall, West Berlin. West Berlin belongs to the Western world, and it was surrounded by a wall in 1968 because it was used by people of East Germany to leave the country to escape the system of communism. And because such a big number of people escaped, the government erected the wall to prevent people from leaving East Germany. So if you travel to Berlin by air or by train, and you go from Berlin, from West Berlin to East Germany, then this is the first thing you see. I try to focus it a bit. This is a wall, the Berlin Wall. You see it in the foreground. The dark spot in the foreground is a wall. Behind is a border area. It is a very sophisticated border. It is probably the best guarded border in the world. It is very hard to cross this border without permission. And you know that there are every year some crazy people who try to do that. Berlin is a divided city, and Germany is a divided country. And if you want to understand that a bit, you just have to imagine that in your hometown, on Main Street or wherever, they would erect a wall, and people who live on the one side of the wall would from one day to another belong to the East, and people who live on the other side of the street without any choice would belong to the West. And they couldn't communicate, they couldn't visit each other, they would be separated, they would live in two different worlds. Try to imagine what that would mean for your hometown. That is the situation in Germany, and of course the church has to struggle with this situation, and of course the people there have to struggle with this situation. Some people of you may know that my brother, who is here with me, lives in West Berlin, and I live in the East. Of course, this all is part of the history. It did not occur in 1968 without a history which led to this event. And part of this history is the war. The war, which was in 1939, started by German troops which invaded Poland, which then invaded France, and later the Soviet Union. And you can still find memories of the war in Germany, ruins left by the war. This is the Frauenkirche in Dresden, the Frauenchurch. And Dresden is a good example for the terror and the meaninglessness of war. In 1944, Dresden was totally destroyed by an air raid. Millions of people who escaped from the east because the Russian army was moving forward toward Germany. Millions of people, refugees, were in the city, and there was no military sense to destroy the city because there were no military objects or no industrial objects. It was a cultural and art city. But it was destroyed in one night, and thousands of people died in this night. So it was decided that the ruin of the Frauenkirche should remain as a sign to remember people on the terror of war. And it's quite interesting that in front of the Frauenkirche, you can hardly see it, is the statue of Martin Luther. There are, of course, other ruins left, not so famous ones. This is the ruin of my own church. I live right next to this ruin. This is the church of St. George in Wismar. I live in Wismar on the Baltic Sea. But another thing to remember for our history, which is quite important for Germans to remember, is that part of the terror of the war was the terror of the Nazis against other people, especially against Jews. This is a concentration camp. This is a concentration camp of Buchenwald near Weimar. And I think it is a good thing that every student in East Germany has to visit a concentration camp to be remembered on the Holocaust of the Jewish people, and to be remembered that the terror of war was started from German soil. So, if we try to understand the history of the divided Germany, we have to keep that in mind, that the development began with the Nazis and with the war. The tragedy of Germany and the tragedy of the situation in Europe is that the division of Europe came only as a result from the division of the two allies of the Second World War, the Russians and the Americans, who have been allies during the war and who became very soon after the war enemies. So the whole plan for a democratization and a development of a new Germany was influenced by this development, and the whole plan which was designated for a new Germany had to fail because the two powers which ruled Germany were now enemies. That may be enough for the history, the political history of East Germany. Of course, the history of Germany goes much farther back than only 1933. And the history of the church in East Germany goes farther back, goes back to the 6th and 7th century. This is the oldest church on East German soil, the Stiftskirche in Gernrode, a Romanic building. We can take a look inside. And of course, that is part not only of the tradition of the church, but part of the heritage of our people and part of the culture in Germany. So you couldn't expect that the church would cease to exist after 30 years of communist rule. A church which has a tradition of over 1,000 years cannot be just wiped out of history, and it will not be wiped out of history. Even if in a totalitarian state the politics of the state and the philosophy of the state works against the church. Because every one of you knows that the communist philosophy, the Marxist philosophy, is an atheistic philosophy. And we come to this later, how strong the influence and the impact of this philosophy is on the life of East Germany. But if we make a jump a couple of hundred years farther in the history, we come to the Reformation, which took place in Germany, which started in Germany, and this is the church where it all started, the Stadtkirche in Wittenberg, where Luther preached. And of course, this is part of our heritage too, and part of our tradition, and it is unique that communism met Protestantism in East Germany. In all other communist countries, other church traditions are stronger than Protestantism. Soviet Union, Bulgaria, Romania, the Orthodox tradition. In Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Hungary, the Roman Catholic tradition. Only in East Germany, the Protestant church is the strongest church. This is the inside of the Stadtkirche in Wittenberg, the pulpit from which Luther preached. But let's come a bit to the philosophy and the politics of the state in connection with the life of the church. One thing which is very important to understand in communist countries is that the state and the state philosophy claims to rule over every aspect of your life. Not only about the political life, but also about the economy, also about the culture, also about personal relationships. Everything is ruled by the philosophy of the state. And the state tries to influence and to indoctrinate people from the very beginning on. And that is not a secret, that is done very openly. You have already political education in kindergartens with kids between 2 and 5 years old. They have at least to sing some patriotic songs or have to learn who the enemy is or have to learn how nice and progressive it is to live in a communist country. And this influence of the state ideology is everywhere. People who come from outside see always propaganda sheets and propaganda posters. People from East Germany don't see them, they don't read them, but they are as influential as the commercials in your country. You probably don't read the billboards on the highway, but they go into your mind. You may not notice it, but they do. And that is exactly how the propaganda works in East Germany. People who are Christians have problems from the very beginning on, but it begins to be really difficult when they enter schools. Today it is the case that most school kids are alone in their class. They are the only one who is a Christian. And that is quite difficult because you can become an outsider, and it's very difficult for kids to be an outsider. It is a problem which comes into Christian families and which comes into the church, and we have to learn how to handle this problem. You can be very lucky if you have another person who is a Christian in your class. I speak a bit now later about the change in politics during the history of East Germany, but it is still the case that you have to be a bit careful if you are a Christian. It can be influence your career, it can be influence your job position, it can be influence your education. So people are discouraged to be a Christian, to say the least. And the influence of the atheistic and materialistic philosophy is very strong. Every school kid has to go to political education. Every school kid has to join the Communist Youth Organization. There are a few people who do not do that, but they face trouble. And every kid has to go through a kind of rite, I call it. It is a kind of confirmation, but a confirmation for the communist society, of course, not for the church. And if you don't join this ceremony, you face problems too. Here's an example for such a propaganda sheet. It says DDR, that means East Germany, German Democratic Republic, USSR, program till the year 2000, dimension of everlasting partnership. You have to know that this partnership is enforced by 500,000 Russian soldiers in our country. So we have not much choice to accept the system or not. People who live there just have to accept the system. I speak a bit later on about the political system. The machine does not accept every slide from me. But first I want to speak a bit about the daily life of people. You may have heard that Eastern countries have problems with economy, and in a way that is true. For example, one big problem is housing. But one reason for this problem was, of course, that almost whole Germany was destroyed in the war. And West Germany got the help from the United States with the Marshall Plan after the war to rebuild their country. East Germany did not get that help. So there are still leftovers from the war. The government tries very hard to erect buildings, apartment buildings for people. There is a plan that till 1990 every family has its own flat, its own apartment. I doubt that they can fulfill this plan, but anyway, I don't know if I would like to live in such a building, but that is the only way to solve this problem. But there are more economical problems. For example, cars. This is an East German car. It doesn't work. But people who want to buy such a car have to wait for 10 years. They have to inscribe in a list and then they wait for 10 years to get such a car. Of course, public transportation is much better than in the United States. But still, sometimes you need a car, and it makes your work and your life difficult if you have to wait that long for industrial goods. And sometimes you have even problems with food. This is a line for meat in Leipzig, and I took this photo just before I left, so it's a very actual photo. Some people just don't have the time to stand in line that long for meat, so they don't eat meat. But it is always a matter with whom you compare. If I compare the life in the United States or the life in West Germany with the life in East Germany, I would say we are a pretty poor country. But there are other countries to compare with. There is the world which we call the two-thirds world, because it is two-thirds of the world, which suffers from hunger. And they have no problems with purchasing a car, because all they want is food. And in East Germany, people can afford to throw bread away. So maybe even we, who seem so poor, are too rich in a world where millions of people die from hunger. One big problem of the life in East Germany is the militarization and the presence of the state power everywhere. People notice who visit East Germany that you can see on every street policemen, soldiers, military. It's not that much how like people expected it. I had a visit from a group from England, and people asked me, where are the soldiers with the guns in the street to keep the people quiet? It's not that bad. But there are everywhere police, and there's everywhere military. And that is one struggle of the church, because the church does not accept the state as the only power in the life of the people. People need space, need room for their own decisions. And if you enforce your politics only with demonstrating your power, you cannot give people opportunity for their own decisions. Every East German citizen, every male citizen, has to go to the army, and that is unique in the communist bloc. Only in East Germany there is a kind of possibility for conscientious objectors, but they have to go to the army, they just don't use weapons during their service. But for some very few people, this compromise is not acceptable, and they refuse the service totally and face prison sentences for years. I showed you a picture of the wall before. This is another picture of the border in between East Germany and West Germany. It says border area, entering strict forbidden. Maybe that is one of the biggest problems for the people there. Maybe they would accept the communist rule, but they do not accept and they do not like that they are not allowed to go wherever they want. We are not allowed to go to the West. We can not even visit our relatives in West Germany. Only some people get the possibilities to special occasions like a high birthday or a wedding, or maybe you can go to a funeral, but not everyone is allowed to go there. So that is one of the biggest problems of the life in East Germany, that people feel a bit like in a big prison or under the control of the state. Maybe you know these two men. This is Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. And people reason in East Germany why the state erected this monument. I don't know if you agree with me, but I think they both do not look very happy. Karl Marx even had to sit down. And maybe that is a good image or a good picture of the situation of East Germany. There are a lot of people who are just tired, and there are a lot of people who have no hope, because we don't expect any change in the next future. I think most people in East Germany are even very careful about what is going on in the Soviet Union with the glasnost policy of Gorbachev. It's hard to judge that without realizing it in the country. I haven't been there for a year, but I'm skeptical. And it's interesting that Gorbachev never mentioned religion or church in his politics of glasnost. There is no indication for any change towards the church in the politics of the Soviet Union. And even in the other communist countries like East Germany or Czechoslovakia, there is a strong reluctance, even opposition, against the new politics of Gorbachev by the leaders of these countries. A bit about the church life. I told you already that there is a church, and it is interesting that the church is the only independent institution in East Germany which is not ruled by the state. Of course, our possibilities are limited by the state, but the state has no possibility to decide what the church is doing. The state can maybe decide what the church cannot do, but it cannot decide what the church is going to do. The church life is, on the one hand, very traditional, and that comes from a long history of the church in Germany, in which the state had been for a long time a state church. That comes from the rule of to whom you belong politically, to them you belong as a church member. And therefore we have area churches, we have areas in Germany where only Lutherans live, we have areas in Germany where only Reformed people live, because the ruler, the emperor, or whoever it was, the count, decided which religion should be in his country. This is my church in Wismar. You saw the ruin, and we got as a gift by the Swedish Lutheran Church a little church building which was erected right beside the ruin. And this is a traditional worship service, and the worship is the main center of the life, of our life in the church. Of course, we don't have this active participation in worship as you have. For example, I have 2,000 members in my congregation. I think it is very good if 200 people come to church on Sunday. That is a very well attended worship service. And that shows that the church in East Germany is going a long way from a traditional church, from a traditional state church, to a church of committed members. And that is a very hard development that is sometimes not easy to accept for church people and for church leaders, but I think it is a good development. I'm more happy to have 400 active members than 2,000 members and only some few participate in the life of the church. But if you look at figures, you are very depressed when you realize that we lost over 50% of members during the 40 years history of East Germany. But sometimes churches are very packed, especially to several occasions, like a meeting of the area, or this is a big brass choir meeting. And sometimes people really like to go to church because it is just a difference in the life of the society. And therefore, one ministry which became more and more important in our church is the ministry of music. People who do not belong to the church come to church concerts and listen to religious or to Christian music. And of course, that is a way to tell the gospel too, as well as with words. And it's interesting that sometimes people are more reachable by music. Maybe that tells a bit about the difficulties to put things into words. Sometimes it's easier to express something with art than with mere words. But of course, that is a challenge, especially for pastors, to reach people by word too. And when, for me, the most difficult and the most important worship service in the year is the service on Christmas Eve, because on Christmas Eve I have to have 4 worship services, because our church is just too little for all the people who want to come. People who do not belong to the church, but on Christmas they feel a kind of drive, a kind of need to come to the church. And that is a big challenge for me, what to tell these people. And can I really show that being a Christian makes a difference in life? You see from this picture, this is the installation of a bishop, of the bishop of the Mecklenburg Church, that sometimes the life of the church looks very traditional. The black talar and the collar and so on. Sometimes we are a bit too lazy or a bit too afraid to bring modern stuff into our church, and that is sometimes difficult for young people to accept. But on the other hand, if you live in a country where propaganda is so important, you learn to estimate tradition, and you learn to estimate history, which is an enormous strength. And we are a bit careful to change everything very quickly, because then it loses its meaning. As I mentioned, music is very important, and I think in every city, every Lutheran church has a full-time church musician, because it is not only important for the ministry of the church, but also for the life of the church. So we have in Wismar a big choir, and although it is not a very big city, we give concerts like the St. Matthew Passion by Bach, or like the Creation by Haydn, or whatever it is. And that is quite a big event for a city like Wismar, because sometimes that is the only culture which happens in the city, done by the church. This is a cappella concert in my church. This is our brass choir. In some little towns, you can get only musical education if you come to the church, if you go to the church musician, which teaches you to play piano or to play a trumpet or the organ. I mentioned Christmas, and Christmas and Easter are maybe the highest feasts in our church, and a lot of people show up at this time who never come to church during the rest of the year. And some people are angry about that, and they try to show this anger to the people, but I don't think that is a good way to invite people to come again. A bit about the young people in the church. Of course, we have the traditional way to educate people. There is no religious education at all at school. There is no information about religion at school. There's only one philosophy which is taught at school, that is a Marxist philosophy. You cannot even learn about existentialism or about idealism or whatever philosophical school. The only acceptable worldview is a Marxist worldview. So the church has quite a task to educate people. And we do that in the traditional way, and we do that in modern and new ways. The traditional way is catechism classes. But sometimes it's very difficult. If you have a class of maybe 7-8 kids, some come from Christian families and know everything about the Bible and about Christianity. Some kids just come with their friends and have no idea. They may have not seen a Bible before. So it's very difficult to make programs which fit to everyone. About 60 to 65% of members of my congregation are at least above 60 years old. And that is representative for churches in East Germany. And that still shows that we are a church on the way from a national church to a minority church. So we have, of course, to take care of all our old people. But there wouldn't be any hope for the church if it would be only a church for old people. And therefore, we put a lot of emphasis of inviting new young people, and especially doing mission for people who come not from a Christian background. But before I talk about this, a bit about church buildings and money of the church. You have to imagine that in every village, in every city of East Germany, is at least one church. And that is a good thing, and that is a ballast for the church, because you have to take care of all these buildings, and it costs a lot of money just to pay for this construction work. You can imagine that is on the church, on the bell tower of the Cathedral of Wismar, just to pay for this. Where does the church get its money from? We have no church tax as it exists in West Germany. The money is collected by the church, so the situation is similar like the situation here. But we do it a bit differently, because we had, of course, this old tax system too, that people just paid church taxes. So we tell people, if you have an income of this amount, it would be a help for the church if you would pay this amount of money, otherwise the church could not work. So we do not collect the money in the worship service. We do collect money in worship services, but this money is only for special things, like if we need to rebuild our church tower, or if we need some stuff for education and so on. This money is collected in the worship service. But the most money of the church comes from a kind of membership fee of the people. That sounds maybe a bit strange, but that's the best way to describe it. There is some money from the state, because a church cannot afford to keep all the buildings. It costs that much money that we wouldn't have the money, and the state, of course, is interested to keep buildings, especially on tourist places, so the state pays some money for that. I mentioned the work with the youth. I think that is a very important task for the church, and we do quite a bit of different things. We do retreats with young people. But the most important thing is to give them the opportunity to be themselves, to find a way to be a person, to find a place where they are not told, you have to be this way, you have to believe this, you have to think this. That is the way the state deals with young people. The church learned to deal a bit differently with young people. And it's interesting and amazing that the church in its history often did the same mistake, that it told people, you have to believe this, you have to think this, you have to behave this way. We try at first to teach people that they are persons and that they are loved by God the way they are. And then we can discuss what may be good to believe and what may be good to do and what may be good to think. These are people of my youth group in Wismar, and it is quite difficult for them, and sometimes I'm very happy and very astonished by their courage to come to the church, because they risk something if they do that. And sometimes they have even conflict in their families. I have a lot of parents in my congregation who tell their kids, why do you go so often to the church? Why do you go that often to the youth group? You know what you risk. Can't you wait after you graduate from high school? Because then you have your place at the university. You know that you can have disadvantages, so don't do it so openly. And these kids say, that's the place where we belong, so we go there. And that's the place where we feel comfortable, so we go there. And that is quite amazing. Sometimes these teenagers have much more courage than their parents. Another very important task of the church is to have relationship to other churches, to do ecumenical work, and to do work across the border. The church is the only institution which organizes meetings where people can come together. Of course, we cannot bring our people to the West, because that's impossible, but we can invite our fellow churches. We have a partner congregation in Holland, we have a partner congregation in West Germany, and maybe we have someday a partner congregation with the United States too. And it's very important for our people that other people come to visit us, because we cannot leave the country. So this is a meeting between our partner congregation in Lübeck, West Germany, and the young people of our congregation in Wismar, East Germany. And of course, we don't only speak about serious things, but we have a lot of fun together. We play, we sing, we do sports, we hike, we go swimming and sailing. So it would be a wrong impression if you would think that being a Christian in East Germany means only to bear a cross or to bear a burden. It's a lot of fun, and it's a good possibility to make something out of your life. Maybe not the way the society expects it, and maybe not the way that you make the best career you can ever make, but it is a good thing to be a Christian. This, by the way, is in my apartment in Wismar, East Germany. I'm lucky to have a very big apartment, so many events of the youth group happen in my apartment. Sometimes we are even possible to organize vacations together. This is the blonde girl, is a girl from West Germany, and the girl with the dark hair is from East Germany, and they spend their vacations together with a church group in Romania. And some people from the West come and some people from the East come. And it is very important that people spend time together to learn to accept each other and to learn to understand each other. Because that is the only way we can work for peace, if we learn to understand each other. But of course, our possibilities in that are limited, and we reach borders every day in this, so you have to be very careful in organizing this. Another, maybe a bit unusual way of the church is to do theater, and that is one hobby of mine. So I wrote some plays for my youth group, and we put them on stage and performed it in East German churches. Of course, we were never allowed to produce them in theaters, but we did that in churches, and it is a different way to say the same thing. And sometimes we even put some political stuff in it. And of course, there is again the question of your limits and your borders. You have to be careful with that. But in this play, we had a demonstration. We put a demonstration in the play, and that was quite a sign for people in the church. Of course, we cannot do demonstration outside. That would be almost like committing political suicide. But at least we did it inside the church to show the people that something is wrong if you cannot go on the streets and express your opinions. Something about church and state. And this is a very meaningful picture. This is the parliament of East Germany. We have a parliament. And in the windows of the parliament, like in a mirror, you can see the Berlin Cathedral. How do church and state work together in East Germany? You can imagine that there are problems, but the problem is not only that there is a separation between state and church. Maybe that is very good for the church, that there is this separation. The problem is more or less how you interpret this relation, this separation. I told in the sessions last week that you have to interpret the separation between state and church in the United States, for example, very differently than the separation in East Germany. In East Germany, the state claims that the separation means the church has nothing to do with politics. Church is only in charge of religion. But that is unacceptable for the church, because that would lead to a schizophrenic understanding of life. You cannot be a Christian without implication for your political understanding of your country. You cannot be a Christian without drawing some conclusions for the life as a citizen. So that is a conflict the church is daily in. And it's interesting that the same conflict sometimes occurs in the life of the church in the United States. How far can the church go with political statements? How far is the gospel connected with your understanding of economy, for example? I think it is. And there are some people in the church of East Germany who try to do no political work at all, who think it is enough if we have worship services, who think that it is enough that we have only Bible studies. But how can you read the Bible if you not read it as a citizen of a country? And how can you read the Bible without relating it to your own reality? In 1978, after a situation where the church was under a lot of pressure, where the state tried very hard to push the church out of life, the state realized that against their theory that in a communist society there would be no need of the church, against this theory, the church stayed alive. And the church still was very strong. So the state introduced a new policy towards the church, and this policy has positive and negative aspects. In 1978, the presiding bishop of the Lutheran Church in East Germany was invited by the president, Erich Honecker, and they had a 2.5 hour long talk. Out of this talk came a lot of advantages for the church. One big advantage was that the state allowed big church rallies, as you see here. This is not a meeting of the Communist Party. This is a church rally in East Germany. Thousands of people gather publicly to worship and to listen to the Word of God. In Dresden in 1983, in the Luther year, there came over 100,000 people to such a rally, and over 80% of these people were under 25 years old. So of course that is a big advantage for the church to be allowed to do that. That is backwards, I'm sorry. And you can reason about why the state allows that. One reason, I think, for sure is that the state realized that every society needs a ventile. And the state maybe thinks it's better when people go to church than they gather on the streets and protest against the policy of the state. The state hopes that a new policy towards the church calms down opposition, because people can speak out in churches, and that calms them down. But whatever the church indicates by doing this new policy, I think the church has to use it and has to fill it with their own interpretation and their own usage of this policy. Another advantage was that the work in the ecumene, the work in the world church, was much more easy for the people of the church in East Germany after this talk. I wouldn't be here in Holden Village, I wouldn't be able to teach in the United States for a year if this change in policy wouldn't have happened. And of course, you can again reason why the state did allow me to come out here. And maybe the state has some good reasons for their own policy to do that. But it's always a question what you made out of it. This picture I brought with me because it's very unique, and I think it almost went a step too far that we were allowed to use public announcement boards to announce church events. You see the green poster on the left, down on the left, is an announcement of a church rally. And I know that some voices in the state did not like this development, and they interfere, because there's not only a power struggle in the church, but of course there's a power struggle in the state too. And some communists agree with the new policy, and some do not. At this church meeting, the state even provided us with the possibility to feed the people, and that was quite a help for us to do. Another interesting thing of East Germany is this shield that says Karl Marx University, Department of Theology. And I'm very proud that I received my PhD in theology from the Karl Marx University of Leipzig, because that is unique in the world. There is no other Karl Marx University in the world which gives PhDs in theology. Of course, that is part of the academic tradition in Germany, because for a history of over 500 years, the German the theological department was the first department on every university, and the state didn't want to change this. But Of course, it is kind of the new policy that the state allows the universities to educate pastors. And there is a greater openness towards that in the state. I have to look at my clock. Is it already 6:58? It's too bad. I go quicker. Some Americans told me very proud that they smuggled in Bibles into East Germany. They were very disappointed when I showed them this slide, because that is a state bookstore where you can buy Bibles. So you have to learn that there are differences in the situation of the church in different communist countries. If you are interested in this topic, listen to the tape from the session of last week. Another possibility, I spoke already about that, is the academic exchange program. This is Professor Walter Baumann, a close friend of Holden Village, who was teaching at our seminary for a couple of months. And after his visit in East Germany, I was allowed to teach for a year at his seminary, at Trinity Lutheran Seminary in Columbus, Ohio. And this is very unique too. This is Mark Menaka from Grand Rapids, Michigan. And he was allowed, and that is a step farther, to live as a student of theology for 1 year in East Germany, which meant quite a lot for the people to have an American citizen sharing and living with them for 1 year. Very short about two big conflicts between state and church. The one problem is the ecology. Has the church the right to speak up concerning the ecological disaster which happens every day in Europe? If you haven't seen a dying wood, that it is so it looks like that. It is quite horrible, and the problem with the communist state is that it cannot accept mistakes, and it cannot accept to be wrong, because the ideology is always true. There is a song, a propaganda song, which says the party is always right. And that is not meant ironically. The party is always right. So the existence of dying wood is just denied. And if you speak about that, you act against the state. So if the church tries to speak about this problem, it acts against the state according to the state policy. And that is a big problem. The church does not accept that. And the church speaks up, and the church does something. And if it is only planting a new tree, maybe that's too less, but at least it is a sign for the society. The other issue is the peace issue, and maybe that sounds familiar to you. The policy of the state is there are good weapons and there are bad weapons. The good weapons are the ones which protect us against the enemy, which is the imperialism and the capitalism, especially of West Germany and the United States. And there are bad weapons. These are the weapons with which the enemy threatens us. A very familiar logic, a logic of militaries who want to increase their own power. The church says, in our situation, there are no bad weapons and there are no good weapons. All weapons are bad. And when we want to survive, we have to fight against every weapon. And as citizens of East Germany, we have to start with our country, and then we can speak about other countries.